Happy Wednesday, y'all. It's Dr. Pookie, and I am back on the scene off of my unplanned one-week hiatus, I have to say. Life kind of came up and snatched me by the wig and the throat and said, you will not be getting an episode out this week. So I am back this week, and I'm really honored to present part one of my two-part conversation with Trilificent of Gay Side Stories, as well as Ratchet Ramblings, and he is the founder of Pods by QPOC, the website, as well as the hashtag that I often talk about, and he is the co-founder of the recently formed Flawless Network. In this episode, we get into a range of topics around gay men and mental health, looking at internal pressures as well as community pressures, and a continuation of my last episode where we talked about the pursuit of perfection to a certain extent. This we're kind of taking inward. So I hope you are able to sit back and enjoy this first part of a conversation I had enjoyed immensely, and I'm grateful to the brother for sitting down with me, particularly for as long as we talked. We talked nearly 3 hours. So once again, this is part one of a two-part series, and thanks for joining us, and definitely be sure to share and rate this episode. Share us with a friend on your social media, and that's all I got for now. We'll cover some more of that in the rest of the episode. Take care, y'all. Welcome back to the Sexual Healing Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Pookie, and with me today we have a very special guest and someone I'm a big fan of. Please introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, hello. My name is Curtis. I go by Trilificent on all social media. You may or may not be familiar with me. I am the host of Gay Side Stories, co-host of Ratchet Ramblings, co-founder of the Flawless Noises Media Network, and the creator of the Pods by QPOC hashtag and directory.
Yes.
Ooh, that sounds like I actually do stuff.
You actually do quite a bit.
I don't do nothing. I take naps. That's what I do. I go to sleep. Okay. No, me.
Well, that's important. I probably will take one myself because I didn't take my crazy ass to bed until almost 4 a.m. It's weird. I was talking to my therapist about that yesterday. He's like, so what do you get out of being up so late? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, don't give me that. You know, it's just like, I was like, oh, God. I was snatchballed yesterday, as I often am. Meeting with that brother, but he's doing me some good service. But I have to say to Trilificent, you're one of the reasons why I actually got my nerve up to start podcasting, because I saw your podcast listed as one of the top 5 black gay podcasts you should be listening to. I think it was also on the list with like the John Effect, and of course they had The Read on there. The Outline with Kevin DeWayne. And I was able to listen to you guys, and I was like, these are just regular folks just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And each of you had very different ways that you do what you do. And I said, you know, it's like Trilificent is much closer to what I would probably do if I ever got the nerve up. So, you know, as I said, I'm a fan, and I thank you for the inspiration. Yeah,
thank you for those kind words. I just be running my trap, trying to make it sound good, make it sound intellectual.
Well, you know, we all have our moments. Although I've had to work to not be so intellectual.
You can be a little wordy.
That's just the smidge. Just a smidge, yeah. Well, you know, it's weird because I was supposed to probably be a clinical psychologist, but I didn't want to deal with folks' problems like that. And yet I ran from it, and I swear daily I'm dealing with folks' problems. Everybody that I know, I'm the go-to.
what should I do? And he said this to me, and I don't, what's that mean? And I'm like, oh gosh. And my favorite is, I had this dream, and what is that? I was like, I don't do dream interpretation. You know, it's like everybody thinks that this is all the same. And I was like, it's all very different stuff, y'all. But this was
paid services.
Well, that too, because, you know, I guess I get paid by these folks with love. Because
no, those are monetary. those are involved services that you may want to have a little bit of background and training on. Hence, mm-hmm. you charging for them. I get it, but yeah, some things you want to seek professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because certainly. I just remember I was going to be a clinical psychologist, and, you know, I took abnormal psych, and we had a field trip to like a mental health care facility, and it was residential. And I just remember walking down the hallway as we're coming into this place, and it just struck me as a chamber of horrors. And I said, I don't know if I can help these people. And I don't know if it's just, you know, you had the guy that they had a helmet on him because he, you know, he was a headbanger. And you had the guy that ruminates, you know, so he would regurgitate and play with it. Mm. And I was just like, I don't know what to do with that. And it just didn't occur to my crazy ass that, you know, you don't have to do this for the rest of your life. In this way, you know, you could go the Beverly Hills way. But yeah, life would have been different, I think, had I gone in there. But I'm making a late in life comeback, so it's cool.
There you go.
Yeah. So, well, thank you for coming out and joining me today. What was life like this week for you? A little icebreaker.
Life this week has been trying to get back on the rails, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I've kind of been having what I usually call a depressive low for the past few weeks. And I took time off from my podcasts. I took a mental health day from work on Monday. I just didn't have it. And I mean, it was to the point where friends were like, is everything okay? You've been mad, irritable, or grumpy, or you've been real short, or this, that, and the other. And it's just, I didn't really catch it, I guess, because it didn't feel like it has felt in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't realize I was being grumpy. I was tired, but sleep was not helping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just kind of had that breakdown of I just need to disengage and spend some time with myself and not do all of the things that I normally do. So this week, I would say probably even yesterday at work on Friday, when I was talking to my friend on G-Chat, that relic, shout out to the real.
Oh gosh.
But I was telling her, like, today was the first day that I started to feel normal again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really been the majority of my week. Also, trying to find another place to live has been stressful, but I think that is situated. So that's a huge weight off of my shoulders, especially since it seems like it's going to be beneficial as far as finances. So that's been my week, you know, just trying to get back in the saddle or whatever. The cool kids say these days.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever you do, I don't know. Get back into Tesla. I don't know. Whatever.
Okay. For the Tesla. Have you been in one of those, though?
I have not, but I see a lot of them here in the Seattle area.
Oh, that makes sense. They are nice. A friend of mine has like the Model 3, maybe. And I didn't realize that the whole console, it's basically a steering wheel and an iPad, like, yeah, mounted. And I just said, wait, so you operate the whole car from an iPad? And she's like, mm-hmm. I said, damn, it was nice, too.
They look nice. I mean, I don't know about the ones that I see, especially by my job, because the streets are all tow up.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I'm I saw somebody driving one, and I was like, this may not have been the street you wanted to go on. So, of course, they drive at 1 mile an hour because there's so much construction. The street is torn up. But outside of that, they're like, yeah, they're nice. Like if I was rich, rich. Like even if I had the money, I'm like, I need to be rich, rich. I need to be, oh, I just hit a pothole. I know this going to cost $5,000 to fix. That's no big deal. It's a drop in the bucket, rich, for me to mess with a Tesla.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I know another friend of mine has like the SUV, I guess. I think it's the Model X. And I didn't get a chance to peek in there, but I know it's lovely. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So life in Seattle is going relatively well, aside from, you know. Because I do remember the, who was it that left something on your car at work? That had me hollering.
That damn piece of garlic bread on my windshield.
I was like, who the hell does that?
That was the weirdest. Like, is that some things that you can't even make up? I would never in a million years have thought to make up that someone put bread on your windshield. I went out to my truck like, what is that on my windshield? And I'll get closer, and it's like a huge Texas toast-sized piece of garlic bread. And it had been raining that day, so it was soggy. And I'm just like, who does this?
Oh, my gosh.
How does this happen?
That was so damn random. When I heard that, I said, wait, what? Then I was like, is that some sort of new hire hazing or some foolishness?
I don't know. I can't even fathom a sequence of events that would lead to a piece of garlic bread being on somebody's windshield.
Oh my god, yeah, that was just, yeah, I don't know, y'all have me screaming on Ratchet Ramblings. I have to give y'all your flowers on that, because every week I howl.
It's a whole mess. Listen, if you are easily offended by crass and sometimes racially insensitive jokes, Ratchet Ramblings is not for you. But if you watch reality TV such as Real Housewives of Potomac and Black Ink Crew Chicago, and you know, you can get out of your head for a little bit and just laugh at some straight foolishness and shit talking, then check it out.
Yeah, I know. It was like, we just had my niece's second birthday party not too long ago, and I was asking several of my sister's friends who came to the party, do y'all watch reality TV? And they're like, hey, yeah. I'm like, y'all need to be listening to Ratchet Ramblings. And I swear half of them were like, what's up? Now, I heard about this podcast thing. What is it? And I just said, like, what do you mean, what is it? And I was helping folks get software installed on their phones, and because half of them were iPhones, so that was easy. Right. Although I said, you probably don't want to use this app, you know, I use this one. And then, you know, the folks with the Android phones, we had to find them an app, period, and then help them find shows. And I've been sending folks y'all's way and your way for a while. Because, you know, people are like, well, I'm tired of all just this ratchetness. I'm like, well, there are some dignified shows out there. It's like, you know, you got to do a little work to find them. But yeah, that's why I love the pods by QPOC. I always shout that out, because had that existed when I first started listening to podcasts, it would have saved me a lot of time.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where I've never really told it. First of all, before I talk about that, thank you for sending people my way. You know, shout out to you being a brand ambassador. We stand.
Thank you.
But as far as Pods by QPOC, I never really fashioned myself as the kind of person that's like, I see a need, I'm going to fill it. Mm-hmm. But I was just, I think at the time when I came up with it, there were all these people on Twitter that were constantly every day, I want to find more podcasts hosted by queer people of color. Mm-hmm. And every time they did, they would, you know, people would tag the ones that they listened to. My show would get tagged a couple of times. Barry over at Pods in Color would tag my show and a few other shows. Mm-hmm. And finally, I was just like, do we not have that where we could just say, hey, go check out this directory. There's tons of shows on there. And turns out that we didn't. And I even went on Pods and Color to be sure, because I didn't want to step on her toes. Because, you know, as soon as you see someone, people see someone doing something like, well, such and such is already doing it. What is you doing?
That's true.
So I went to Pods and Color and I was like, okay, she has all these different categories, but she didn't have an LGBT one at the time. I don't know if she does now, but she didn't at the time. Now, there's tons of shows on there, but they're sorted by what the content is about.
Oh, okay.
Pods by QPOC is more about the hosts and the content doesn't matter. And okay. So I put the feelers out there. I started it. She has been super supportive, you know, realizing that, okay, this is something that people need it. We didn't even realize we need it. And I was happy to do it because I felt like it was something for us by us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as I like Pods and Color and having all the people of color get together in this podcast community, because as Papa Pope reminded us, we got to work twice as hard to get half of what our white counterparts get.
That's true.
But we also know that a lot of times a lot of our skin folk ain't kin folk.
Well.
And so I was like, I want something that's by one of us,
mm-hmm.
featuring us. Now, granted, at the time, I was like, I ain't trying to do all that work.
Yeah, that's the part.
But I mentioned it, and I'm really blessed by the people around me, because as soon as I mentioned it, my friend Candace, who is my co-founder with Flawless Noises, immediately sprang into action. Within a few hours, she had a logo. And I just had all these people like, oh, yeah, this the hashtag is it's cute. It's catchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, something that I need to do. Now, I will say, with the move, the network, and the depression, yes. Pods by QPOC has definitely been on my very, very low. I've been trying to figure out how I can incorporate it in my weekly tasks, but the network keeps me so busy that I don't know. I may need to find like a volunteer or someone to help me run it, because it's, you know, I have to realize that sometimes I have a little bit too much steak on plate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something that I'm looking into, either trying to figure out a way that maybe I just need to dedicate a couple hours on a Saturday and just get the posts scheduled and get everything updated. Or if I just need to find someone to help me and be like, hey, log into this. You can schedule the posts throughout the week. You don't have to work on it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Something, but you know, I definitely, because it needs to be updated. There's podcasts that unfortunately have ended. Shout out to Kevin with the Outline Podcast.
I know.
So I need to do that, and then I just, you know, want to get back to adding new podcasts and promoting it again. So if you're hearing this and you're willing to help out, look, ain't no money involved at this point, but if you want to help out, you know, shoot me a message, a DM, an at or something, and we can try to figure it out. But, you know, it's I have a lot on my plate right now with the fledgling podcast network. So,
okay. Well, and, you know, I believe we definitely appreciate what you contribute there. And the thing that's been interesting to me is that podcasting, you know, it starts out as fun. But it's some work. I don't know if people realize how much work it is. I'm keeping up with one show. And, you know, you talk about just the load. You know, I got the show. I got a business. And it's marketing is a thing that it just, I haven't put together a meme or any sort of episode announcement in long time. It's just, you know. And then being off the air for 3 months when I was ill, that didn't help the cause either. I don't think I've put together an episode announcement in a good 6 months, I would say. So, yeah, it's raggedy.
But it's work, because just like you're saying, like you have your solo podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's work. Not only it's for me, not only putting the podcast together, recording it. I have weekly guests, so I have to schedule guests and be flexible with my recording times.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the editing. Then there's the, you know, you got to upload. Then there's the promotion, doing graphics and scheduling posts mm-hmm. to go out all week so that, you know, you can try to catch those eyes and put ears to your show. Then I have Ratchet Ramblings. That's a whole nother time commitment.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I got to watch the show to be able to have the content to go on the show. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we don't do a lot of editing because part of the charm of Ratchet Ramblings is us being silly and just doing the most. But there's still marketing. There's still the post scheduling. And then we have Patreon shows. So there's another show I got to record and do all that same stuff. I do all of the editing for the network. So I'm editing, you know, 5 to 6 shows a week.
That's a heavy load.
You know, then we have right now Game of Thrones is on. So we have a Game of Thrones recap show. So that's another show that I got to record, watch for, to get the content. You know, it's a lot on top of, you know, I do have a full-time job. It's a lot. So first, I want to say shout out to everybody. Even if you just have one podcast, listen, I feel your pain and your struggle, especially if you care about it. Because no shade, not everyone puts the same amount of love into their podcasts.
Yeah. And
to the more, I don't want to say trained, more seasoned ear, maybe. You know, if your ear got a little bit Lowry's on there, you'd be like,
okay.
Like, I like what you're doing here, but it,
as opposed to what, some slap your mama, maybe. I don't know.
As opposed to nothing.
And just,
putting out, you know, bland content, but I'm not here to tell anybody that they shouldn't do a podcast. I'm just saying that the level of care and attentiveness that you put into your podcast comes across through the microphone, whether you realize it or not. And that's honestly a lesson that I learned over the past, what, 2.5 years that I've been podcasting.
Yeah, I think that was that come to Jesus moment I had as well, where I said, you know, if you're going to do this, damn it, do it. And so it's like, you know, the stuff that I'm reading, it's like, you know, you're just like, okay, sexual healing, what's that? You know, it was a clever play on words and everything else. But I said, no, this is really what I do want to talk about. Yeah. And I say, you know, I'm just going to step into it at this point. And I have stepped up the level of commitment that's gone into it. And I think that Final Frontier is getting back to the graphics and pushing the show, because I don't even know where to push it, you know, so I'll probably call you about that.
Hey, like I said, 2.5 years in, I'm still figuring it out myself.
Okay.
But, you know, I've picked up a few little tricks and tips here. I mean, the main thing, and I know it's cliche, people don't want to hear it, but it is true. Consistency plays a big role, you know, because when you put something out on a regular basis that people can rely on, that that's what helps. Because listen, I could love you to death. If your podcast is inconsistent, I'm not telling anybody to listen to it, because what are they going to be listening to? If you have sporadic releases, it's no shade. I know life happens, but I wouldn't do that. And I wouldn't expect anybody to recommend my podcast if I'm not putting them out consistently. Taking a week off here and there, planning a schedule break, or having seasons so that you can have a break, that's not what I mean. I mean, you don't communicate and it's an episode every 3 months or episode every 6 months, you know. What am I recommending? So the consistency is a big thing, because when you're consistent, people see that and they're going to be like, okay, well, let me tell such and such to listen to it. Let me tell such and such to listen to it. Oh, this topic was bomb. Let me tell such and such to listen to it. And then they may decide, okay, I like this. I'm going to keep on listening and see what else this individual puts out. But if it's inconsistent, what is there to promote if the content is not there? You know what I mean? And so it really is a come to Jesus moment, where you have to be like, you know what, this is a hobby, but it's a hobby that I have to take seriously if I want people to listen to it. Otherwise, and I mean, and the big thing is, we have to be honest, is that with podcasting, first of all, you have to define your own level of success. You also have to realize that sometimes big levels of success are literally roll of the dice. You know what I mean? And not everybody is going to be a obvious juggernaut like The Reed or some of the other LSN shows. All of us are not even going to be mid-tier and get, you know, 10 to 20,000 listens per episode. Some of us are, we in the hundreds, you know, we small grassroots independent podcasts. But even from there, you can grow from 50 listens to 100 to 200, 300, you know. And that's where I am currently trying to push past the hundreds and see how far can I go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm 100 episodes in and I need to figure out, okay, what is it that I'm missing? Because let me tell you something. I have a lot of gifts. Sales and marketing are not one of them. I do not understand marketing at all. It is not my forte. I'm actually even looking into kind of reaching out within my community, my village, as my friend Bree says, to see what hidden or maybe not even just talents that I didn't know people have. Because a lot of times it's just like if you just put the need out there, then people come. Like I said, when we started this network, all of the pieces just kind of started falling together because we put it out there. Hey, this is what we're doing. Well, actually, I take that back. Not with the network. We kind of did that on our own. That was a lot of hard work behind the scenes. But a lot of things with the podcasting, you just put the need out there and it's met. So now I'm getting to the point where it's like, okay, I need to put this need out there that I need to figure out how to market, not only for my show, because I'm comfortable with where my show is performing, to be honest. But with the network, I feel like I need to push further, and my co-founder is on the same page with me. We need to push further because there's no point in us bringing a collective together to just be coasting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We need to do everything that we can because the podcast thing is not going to last forever as far as smaller podcasts. Mm-hmm. The bigger podcasts that bring in ad dollars, they're probably going to be around for a while. Us smaller ones is... Really, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, I don't want to pay for this no more. Obviously, if you get tired, you get burned out or whatever the case may be. But a lot of it, I think, is just you get to a point where it's like, okay, I don't really feel like I'm getting the return anymore. I'm investing a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, you know, there now, I think when I started, there weren't as many options. But now there's more options where you can kind of podcast for free. You won't. Mm-hmm. be able to do as much because, you know, this free stuff starts to wane as the companies are getting hip and being like, oh, there's money to be made. But
oh yeah,
I say all that to say that podcasting is a job, and love on us, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't just watch our links fly by on your timeline or on your Facebook feed, repost it, retweet it. It's the easiest, quickest, simplest way to support. You don't even have to think about it. You hitting the retweet button takes what, less than a second?
Yeah,
maybe a full second if you add in the hand motion getting to the screen. A second out of your day may get someone on your timeline that does a podcast a new listener.
That's true.
And I'm not saying everybody does it for the listens, but we don't do it for the hell of it either. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, we usually have something we're trying to communicate to somebody.
And, right.
You know, we're trying to reach those folks. Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I think we just did a short masterclass in podcasting, at least for the beginning podcaster in the first 2 to 3 years in the game. And it's appreciated because I think the last time we talked, I said, oh, I hadn't thought about doing that. And you've introduced me to some different tools and things like that I need to actually use. It's like I've set up the accounts and not used them yet. But you know, that's my cross to carry across town, and I will carry it. But I think I'll probably take the material that we've done and probably edit that into a separate little masterclass. And I want to take us into our main topic now. But thank you for those pearls and those gems that you were dropping.
I don't even know how we got there, but
I probably subtly pushed it there and then said, well, he's vibing, so I'm gonna let him go. But there is this, getting to the main topic, there was this book written by Alan Downs titled The Velvet Rage. And, He talks about this theory where he says the Velvet Rage is the deep and abiding anger that results from growing up in an environment when I learned that who I am as a gay person is unacceptable, perhaps even unlovable. And he goes further to say this anger pushes me at times to overcompensate and try to earn love and acceptance by being more, being better, being beautiful, being more sexy. In short, to become something I believe will make me more acceptable and loved. And then he closes by saying the roots of our trauma come from two primary places as gay men. Our experiences of being a man in a hypermasculine society and our experiences of being gay in a straight world. And, I kept coming across this book, and I think even my therapist said, well, you might want to read that, help you, deal with some of the things you're talking about. And I said, really, that book? Okay. So I started, reading it. And there was some useful material in there. And the thing that I wanted to talk with you about, because I know initially I approached you with the whole thing and you were like, oh, this is a lot. I don't know if I can commit to this. And I think
a lot of content.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when you talk about boiling down a 250 page book into a single podcast and really actually dipping into some of this stuff, it's hard. But the thing that I wanted to talk with you about, because you've been pretty candid on your show about your challenges with mental health, and I've hinted at it on mine, I thought we'd talk about, does the Velvet Rage apply to us as Black, gay, bisexual, queer identifying, or also as you got that branch of brothers, the same gender loving folks out there? Does this theory, the way he's presenting it, that you have to be the best, you have to be perfect to be accepted and loved, is that feeding into some of the mental health challenges that we're seeing amongst our non-heterosexual brethren, sistren, and siblings out there? What's your initial thought on that?
I would say absolutely. We can even look at it taking the lens of sexuality off. When you look at the campaigns that are on Instagram and other social media about, or even if we want to put the lens of sexuality, the dating quote unquote apps,
this
push of be nicer and, don't worry about follower counts and all of that kind of stuff. I definitely think that there's some truth to this theory of the Velvet Rage and that pressure that either we feel from the outside and we adopt, or we always have had and apply to ourselves, of being perfect so that we can be accepted, because that's what we see in the media. And when it's someone that is deemed less than perfect, if it's a heavier set person, if it's a gay man, if it's an effeminate man.
Oh, that's a big one.
And if it's a masculine woman, if it's a trans person, then I feel like we're still at a point where they're starting to be celebrated, but they're still outliers on a grand scale. Like, these are one-offs, if that makes sense. It's not a celebration of gay culture, Black gay culture, Black trans culture. We're celebrating Janet Mock because Janet Mock is amazing. We're celebrating Billy Porter and the actors on Pose because Pose is amazing. We're still pushing to say, don't just appreciate this offering. Don't just appreciate Lena Waithe. Appreciate all of us because we're worthy. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to be pretty. We don't have to be any of those things to be valuable. And I do think it leads to mental health challenges, which, if we're going to be candid with people in the community, is already more than likely there for different reasons. I definitely think it's a catalyst sometimes for issues that were already there, or it's just here's some gravy on top of your, mental health struggle meatloaf. Because now, not only you have to deal with whatever issues you have with your sexuality internally and then externally with family, with friends, with jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now you have, not only are you gay, mm-hmm. perfect to be accepted, to not be looked at funny, to not have to always be relegated to the fat, funny friend or something like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, just to be seen as a whole person. And because, you know, the thing that struck me when thinking about this topic is, you know, he quoted some statistics from National Institutes of Health. And he says that just taking race and ethnicity out of it, gay and bisexual men are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide, 2.5 times more likely to become dependent upon drugs or alcohol, and more than 2.5 times more likely to suffer from depression and anxiety disorders than our heterosexual counterparts. I would even say that, you know, what I like to call that black tax, you know, you got the struggle plate of, I would say, being black folks, period. That sets the table for us. Then you have, as you say, that I would say that big juicy steak is probably not being heterosexual. And then, you know, having a little weight on you might be the mashed potatoes. And like you say, being effeminate could be the gravy, you know, the broccoli or whatever. Mm-hmm. The thing that's interesting to me is there seems to be a lot of silence around the issues that particularly, well, even substance abuse. It's interesting to me, looking at the gay community as a whole and then bringing it into the black realm. I've always seen the drug and alcohol use within our community viewed so differently than what it is. I remember watching, someone was talking about, what was it, Boys in the Hood way back, and they said, you know, when Doughboy was sitting there on the porch with his 40, and everybody had a 40, and said that, you know, rampant alcoholism. And I said, I've never thought about brothers with 40s as a product of alcoholism, even though they often have it. And I translate it to like our clubs now. You know, you go into a typical club and everybody has a cocktail or has a beer. And it's not, you know, it's not just having one drink. It's like you got folks that are just fucked up.
Yeah.
And we never, have you ever heard it called alcoholism in that context? Or is it just so-and-so was a mess? Or what's been your experience with that?
I think it depends on what you know about the history of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people, you'll look at it and by this definition, it could be considered alcoholism, mm-hmm. but you ask people in your family and they're like, that's just what he does to unwind. He go to work,
mm-hmm.
you know, he works at, I don't know, whatever bank or whatever post office, whatever he does.
Mm-hmm.
And when he get off, he want to relax, he have him a 40. Okay. That's mm-hmm. different than, okay, Uncle Johnny has been in jail. He has done this. He has done that. He has had this happen to him. He has had that happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you only see him with the 40s, but, you know, behind closed doors is this, is that, and it's this. I think it really depends on the history mm-hmm. of the person. I don't know if it's fair to say that just kind of having a 40 on your stoop is some type of byproduct of alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of that, especially with 40s in particular, you have mm-hmm. to think about the history of the marketing, because that's another thing.
Oh, like, absolutely.
A lot of this is the marketing, like it's almost like I'm hesitant for people in these type of situations to take sole responsibility, because mm-hmm. we know that a lot of these things are heavily marketed towards us.
Oh yeah. Made part of the identity.
Exactly. Like, and you can expand beyond alcohol. Like, think about back in what, the 90s, mm-hmm. when McDonald's had all those quote unquote urban ads trying to get black people to go get them a double quarter pounder.
Yeah, and the McRib. Those things are
marketed towards mm-hmm. us. So, to a degree, it's like, I don't know if I can fault someone for having been susceptible to the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, personal responsibility is always present.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have to be accountable for what you are putting in your body and at what levels. And that level will determine whether someone says, okay, he's just enjoying a drink. And oh, no, he is an alcoholic. Be careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's so interesting that for me, I've just I seldom hear the language. It's just seen as something that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder if it's kind of, if that's a product of just us culturally as Black folk kind of keeping things in the house and out of the public sphere.
I would say that's fair.
Yeah, I wonder how is that kind of damaging us? Because if we're all children of the generations where that was just how it was done, and now we're out there as adults, and we're maybe every weekend we go to the club, we getting toe up, you know, not just having one to unwind, but having about 6 or 7 or 12 and making scenes and fighting folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, you know, how much of that is folks self-medicating and medicating for what issue in particular?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to kind of tie it back as far as the rage and the mental health. Mm-hmm. When you start looking at our community, I think it's fair that, or I think it's fair to say, rather, that there are quite a few times where we can see our peers out and about self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you are friends with them long enough, or acquaintances, or you just happen to reconnect and you see how they've changed their life, they've made a difference. It's kind of like hindsight is 2020. At the time, I may not have realized that you were self-medicating and going, but I thought you were just turning up.
Yeah.
But there's a very subtle difference between turning up and self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, depending on the individual, because some people, it's not that subtle.
Yeah, it's just, there's no debate, no question.
But sometimes I can think of examples in my own life where I look back and I'm like, man, you used to be hella wild. And now you are, you know, you have yourself a nice little cocktail at brunch, a mimosa or three.
Oh,
on a stretcher to get up out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I definitely think that there's some validity to this. And then when you start peeling back the layers and you start getting into it, it's like, man, I was dealing with this, you know, my mom was giving me hell about being gay, or my dad disowned me, or, you know, I had lost my job because there was some drama because some dude came, you know, and whatever the case may be, you start peeling back the layers of, wow, I didn't realize that traumatic event that you were going through was directly tied to why you were doing the things you were doing with drugs, with alcohol, beyond just trying to have a good time. Like I said, you have to be very, what's the word? You have to be very, edit this.
It's, yeah, probably very, I don't know, discerning.
You gotta have like an eagle eye almost to be able to ascertain whether they're turning up for fun and they're turning up to mask pain and try to bury it and get through it. You know, like I said, the self-medicating. Because it's not always obvious, at least not to me. Let me speak for myself.
And it's hard to straddle that fence between, you know, kind of learning your friend and being a true friend to them versus parenting them. You know, getting in their business, because that can be, I've had to learn that the hard way with, you know, with some dear friends in recent years, because I'm a fixer, you know, I'm always trying to fix folks or fix the problem, solve the issue. And I've had to learn to kind of step back and let folks go because it's not mine to solve. But that's it's hard, but it's also it's probably even more difficult to kind of to negotiate. Where am I crossing the line, and when do I need to cross the line? You know, if we are our brother's keeper, because I think what it comes down to for me is within our community, looking at us as Black, gay, bi, same gender loving men and women, is this idea of secrets and managing how you look in the world. So it's like we all want to look like we have it together, even if we are an absolute mess.
Well, I mean, I think that it's kind of part of our culture because how many of us began our journey with our sexuality in secrecy?
Yeah.
How many of us had to have it be a secret from a young age and weren't able to fully realize it until we were in college? Hell, how many of us don't even get that chance until they're in their 30s? where they're finally like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I have to be the real me. And I've been hiding it. The only ones that know the real me are the ones that I happen to lay down with over the years. But now I'm ready, and I'm for the whole world to know who it is that I am. So I think, honestly, in this life, I don't want to say lifestyle because I hate that.
I don't like it either.
In this life, with the things that we are given and the blows that we are dealt, secrecy is kind of par for the course. You know, again, I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience, but I'm also speaking from just observation. Like, I operated in secrecy for a long time.
Yeah.
No, I didn't even really start really fully actualizing what it is that I was feeling and what kind of man I wanted to be as far as my sexuality until I was in college. Did I dilly-dally way earlier than I probably needed to? Yes. Did I understand what was going on? No. Not until I was in college. Not until I was a full grown man. When I was in middle school, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just being trash. In high school, I didn't know what I was doing, you know? And then all of that stuff on top of the depression was just, so I already was secretive just because of what I was dealing with, and I didn't have a name or face to it. But growing up, for a lot of us in households, we have to operate in secrecy because we come from religious families. We come from strict moms. We have come from homophobic dads. We come from grandparents. It's like, we don't want none of that sissy shit and all this other stuff. So we learn from a very early age that there are certain things that we have to keep a secret. And unfortunately, sexuality, your sexuality is not a representation of the total person, but it does have a huge effect on your life.
That's true.
You know,
yeah. And I think also, certainly for us as Black folk, I think respectability is such a huge burden, I think. And that's a lot of that, where it's, you know, you don't want to act out of place. I just remember growing up, and you know, I don't know if I was told this or it's just part of the cultural lore now, where it's like, you don't leave this house embarrassing me. You know, it's just like, I don't know if I had that. I have to inquire. But I know certainly I had the, you know, when we go into the store, don't ask me for shit.
You know, absolutely.
We go in here to get this and don't show your ass, you know, and I definitely remember that. But, you know, going back to this, the idea of living in secrecy and coming out, I mean, I knew at about 4 or 5, you know, what side my bread was buttered on, and I didn't know what to call it. You know, my mom at the time was dating this Navy SEAL, and he was a lot of man, you know, and it's like, and I just love being in his lap, and just, you know, and that has not escaped me. You know, I like a lot of man and to be in his lap to this day, and I didn't have names and terms for it. But part of me knew to keep that to myself. And it's like now, as full grown as men, we're still trying to learn how to break free and just live openly and freely and as loudly as other people do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the midst of still being in danger, because I say this all the time on all of my shows. It's not a cakewalk. Like, people, a lot of people, especially outside of the community, have this idea that if I see gay people or trans people on TV or in movies, then everything is all good for y'all. And it's like, you see women in TV and movies all the time. And it is a war on womanhood currently in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, it's a war on anyone that is marginalized, if you're going to be honest. But every week I see articles of gay men. I'm concentrating on the gay men just because of the conversation that we're having.
Absolutely.
I see gay men being beat up, being killed, not just in other parts of the world where, I mean, there are parts of the world where being gay is still a crime punishable by death.
Yeah, they're throwing folks off rooftops and shit.
Like, it's not all gravy out here. It's not all good just because you see I don't know, whoever on TV. You see this prominent gay, you see Billy Porter on at the Met Gala, and you're like, okay, gay, y'all ain't got nothing going on. Like, y'all on TV, y'all are fine. And it's like, okay, but the next man who looks like Billy Porter but is not in the position of Billy Porter could be bashed over the head on his way home just because he was holding hands with his lover. Like, that is still a thing in 2019.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, and I think a lot of people really devalue that, like the amount of tension that's there. I think that the people that love us, certainly, that are friends and allies and family, they, I think they can recognize some of what we deal with, but I don't know if they ever fully appreciate all of it. It's just like that whole thing of a white person never really truly understanding what it means to be black, or for us as black men never really understanding what it means to be a Filipino immigrant who happens to be a lesbian and has, you know, a 6-year-old kid. You know, it's like we'll never know the struggle and all the different pitfalls that might be waiting for them as we go through this life.
So this concludes part one of my conversation with Trillificent. Definitely check back next week for part two, but for now, we're going to move on to a later part of our conversation.
So I want to move us into our listener letters for this week. We have two. And you said you stick around for the letters. So the first one I think you'll love. it's from Shanae. She says, okay, so Doc, my nigga keeps pressing me to eat his ass and shit, but I'm not that kind of bitch. I love how I'm like, really? Y'all just come at me like this. I was like, y'all know how I talk, but they just be like, he's complained for the longest time that I was not sucking his dick right, and I got that shit together. Now he want me tonguing his hole and shit. Nasty nigga. Why does he want that? It sounds nasty and gay to me. What up with that shit? What you got for Shanae?
Well, first of all, Shanae, the earlier parts of the conversation that we had, if you listen to this whole episode, being cognizant of the things that we say, you're writing into a podcast that is hosted by a gay man saying this sounds gay. So that's an issue in itself that you need to examine. Because the only thing that would make him gay is if he was attracted to other men sexually, romantically, physically, mentally, all those things. So the act itself, it does not and will never make him gay if it's not another man doing it. Number one. Number two, everybody's kinks are different, and if that's something that he's experienced that he likes, then he has every right to want to have it done. Now, that does not mean that you are obligated to do it.
Precisely.
If you have decided, I'm not going to try it, I'm not ever putting a man's ass on mine tongue, there's nothing wrong with that. Stand up in it. You don't have to be homophobic in order to say that. Because you came across a smidge homophobic. I don't want to call you homophobic, but you definitely are using some homophobic language. And I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt that that's not what you mean.
Yeah, we'll call her problematic for the time being.
There you go. You know, the way you are thinking about this is problematic as far as, is he gay? Why does he want that? I mean, why do you want any of the things you want sexually?
Okay.
Like, I don't think that's fair to ask, why do you want this? I think it's as simple as you identify, I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And you present that to him. And if you say, I'm not going to do it, and he, you know, blows a gasket and has an issue, then y'all are not compatible sexually and y'all don't need to be together. And I don't think there's anything wrong with us being upfront and honest about sexual incompatibility. Because listen, because this sounds like this is a straight couple.
Yes.
A lot of straight couples. Listen, sex is huge. What are the two top things, issues in marriage, sex, and finances.
Yes, that's it.
So y'all not even to that point. Y'all are not on the same page sexually. So you need to have a honest conversation. I mean, it doesn't sound like you need to have the conversation with yourself. It sounds like you're very firm.
Yeah, she's
you're very firm that analingus is not for you. Mm-hmm. And you need to be firm in letting him know, instead of trying to figure out why he wants it. You, the only thing you need to be concerned with is letting him know your position on it, and then let the chips fall where they may. And if he continues to press it, if he wants it that much and you know you're not willing to do it, then y'all need to have conversations about seeing other people or opening up the relationship so he can get the tongue lashing that he is so fervently wishing for, and your tongue can be free of man booty.
That's it. Everything you just said, and I would also say, Shanae, I'm just wondering if you really want to be with the guy. I mean, you present everything as such a chore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, you wasn't sucking dick the way he liked it. There are techniques out there, sweetie. There are different. There are many ways to suck a dick. Does he like a lot of ball work? Does he like it? Does he like it on the dry side? Does he like it real wet? Does he want it sloppy as hell? Is he trying to gag you out? There's a whole lot of things around sucking dick. And it just sounds like you don't want to do none of this. It sounds like you just might be a pillow princess that just wants to be a missionary and get worn out. And I respect that. But you
did say that she got it together.
She did get it together, but it sounds like it was grudgingly, you know.
I mean, well, the only reason I kind of push back on that is because a lot of us have an idea of what our sex is giving.
That's
and
true.
We're not open to someone saying, this is not how I want you to do it. Please do it this way. You know, a lot of us have a lot of pride when it comes to sex. And maybe it was just her pride being like, I know how to suck dick. And then here come this man talking about you ain't doing it right. And she's like, oh, you know what I mean? It may not be as deep as that. Because especially with men, I see it, straight men on the timeline. They telling themselves every day about how they don't want to hear about it. What they are giving is sex. And that is it. So the fact that she was even willing to listen to him and change her tactics so that he could be satisfied. But listen, if you have your line, you have your line. I have my line. Like, listen, as soon as you start talking about human excrements,
it's over.
That's not for me. And I don't care if it's coming from the front or the back. That's not my ministry.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't begrudge you if that's what you're into. Mm-hmm. But for me, listen, those things belong one place and one place only, in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a toilet. So,
yes.
I definitely don't. I feel you for standing up and being like, this is not what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, my thing is be mindful of your language and your thought process on this and be upfront and have this conversation with him and stand your ground and don't be afraid to lose the relationship because he wants something that you don't want to give. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people are like, oh, compromise. Listen, some things you compromise on will lead to resentment down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, if you feel this strongly about it now, if somehow you broke down and he convinced you, you ain't gonna do nothing but resent him. Every time you think about that booty in your mouth, you're gonna be mad as hell. So why even put yourself in that position? It's plenty of fish in the sea for both.
Oh, yeah.
It's plenty of fish that don't want their booty licked, and it's plenty of fish that's willing to lick booty.
That's it.
Y'all just are not compatible.
Have you seen that couple? I can't think of their name. They're on Pornhub, and it's a black couple, and she be strapped up and wearing his ass out. But the way she... you probably have not seen them. Somehow they came across my timeline. I said, wow. they were quite impressive. I'm trying to find them now.
I mean, I may have seen the individual, but I mean, there's a couple that I've seen regardless of race that are into those things. And I just be like, all right, well.
Yeah, they are quite, I was like, all right, y'all. I mean, it was interesting. The thing that I loved is seeing a black couple being that free and that open. You
Right.
know, like
And it goes back
she.
to what I was saying before, that because she is strapping him down, that does not make him gay, because there's no one of the same sex involved in the scenario. So it cannot, by definition, be homosexual. If homosexual, if it's two people of the opposite sex, like, we're just operating on plain fundamentals at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think the thing that I have said to many women that I've had these types of conversations with, it's not about sexual orientation as much as it's about pleasure. I was like, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the booty. And how are you going to deprive yourself of all that wonderful activity that could be going on back there? It's just a lot of sensation. And so I say to folks all the time, I've even said to some guys, I'm like, you missing out. Their names are Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Carlisle. And they are no joke. And sister got like the long blonde locks, and she be wearing his ass out. I just like, okay. And I just watching them. I'm not big on, women per se, but watching them gives me a lot of joy because they are
Well,
free and wild. It's
and
like
that's fair.
there is no shame in the game. I'm gonna call it what it is, but she be pegging and rimming and tossing his salad. What was it? It was like what they call gooch before?
Oh,
What was
no.
gooch? No, what is gooch?
Gooch is the taint.
Oh, is that gooch? Oh, okay. Oh, well, I love a nice gooch job then. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I thought it was just kind of like a. Yeah, I'm a little behind on some of the language, I'm just not. It's like I'm not as young and hip as I'd like to be, maybe. But
It's
okay.
overrated. I mean, neither am I, but the bit that I do know, I'm like, I could add a V8.
Yeah, exactly. I like tank, It's just like
Well, I
it's
mean, I
just
do use Gooch, but I've never used Taint before, so it's always been Gooch to me. But yeah, girl, like, either do those exercises and get that tongue strength up,
That's it.
or get your boots on and get to walking.
Yeah, and if you're concerned about, treats, coming out, then you need to maybe alter his diet a bit and, supervise his preparation until he gets it down. 'Cause, we have that stereotype out there about a lot of brothers that just don't keep the ass right, particularly the straight ones.
I mean, it doesn't sound like she's given any thought to it at all because she doesn't want to do it. And I mean, I'm assuming that if he's asking for it means he's had it done before, so he knows how it works.
I think so.
But I don't know. It just sounds like I don't think that there's anything wrong with having clear boundaries, clear sexual boundaries, and walking away from a situation if someone is asking you to go across those boundaries. And if tossing salad, eating ass, whatever you call it, is one of your boundaries, then there's nothing wrong with walking away and being like, you know what, this is not going to work. Either you're gonna have to stop asking, because it's not fair for you to say you have to stop wanting it, because that's not how desire works. But it's either gonna be you gonna uh-oh.
That's me. Sorry.
Either you're gonna have to be okay with not getting it and not bringing it up all the time, or you need to be free to go find you somebody that's going to do that, and I need to be free to go find me somebody that's not going to ask me to do that. I think you just leave it at that, to be honest.
Yeah, it all comes down to choice. It sounds like, I mean, she did get it together, with her fellatio, so perhaps she'll get her analingus together. And frankly, I feel like when a woman sees a man's toes curl, she'd be like, oh, okay.
I mean,
It might inspire her to new heights.
maybe it sounds like she already has a roadblock from doing it, period. So that's why I'm saying, like, there's no point in you wasting your time or his time trying to do all these mental gymnastics. If you don't want to do it, if you don't have the desire to do it, then it doesn't matter how good or bad at it you are. Like, her getting the dick sucking together is different because it was something she was already doing. versus this is like, I don't even want to do it to begin with. So technique be damned.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's, I don't want to
sound like the Reed and be like break up with them, but it sounds like y'all might be headed for a breakup, because
that's what I was thinking. But I was trying to be hopeful after condemning her.
My main thing is, like I said, get that casual homophobia up out of your lexicon.
Yeah.
And then y'all decide from there what y'all gonna do. But my last thought on that, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it.
Yeah, I'm like, ladies, pegging and analingus, those are not homosexual activities. Those are purely sexual activities. And what makes them homosexual versus heterosexual is who they're doing it with.
Yep.
He's asking you to do it. And if you won't, somebody else will. So if you want them, I suggest you negotiate something. And if this is a deal breaker, then you need to move on. Period. You got to be brave enough, put them big girl panties on and say, baby, I can't do this for you. So it sounds like it's a deal breaker. And he may be like, no, it's not that serious. You might be able to keep your man after all. But in the meantime, you got to shit or get off the pot at this point. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah, we'll move on from Shanae. Griffin's question is actually very much related to what we were talking about earlier with depression. He says that his boyfriend is struggling with depression and he doesn't know how to help him. He really cares about him and wants to be supportive, but he has no idea what to do. What would you do in his situation? So that's from Griffin.
So, I'm trying to put myself in that position of what would I want a partner to do if they wanted to try to help me with my depression.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I would suggest is just educating yourself, because a lot of people have in their mind what depression is, mm-hmm. and they don't actually know what depression is.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can even have a possibility of helping if you don't understand what it is he's dealing with. So not only educate yourself in general, but also have conversations with him so that you know what he's dealing with individually.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's depression looks different. It's not always sadness. It's not always suicidal thoughts. It can be a whole host of things that you don't even consider to be something that a depressed person would be dealing with. And it's a lot. Like I said, it's way more than what most people think. Oh, you ain't got no reason to be sad and that kind of stuff. Like it's a lot more than sadness. So I would suggest educating yourself first, communicating with him, asking him, what can I do to help? And maybe he's never thought of it. He might think of some things. Maybe he'll just be like, I just need my space. And that's fair too.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I mean, outside of just being there for him in any way that you can and letting him define what that is, as long as he's relatively safe, you know what I'm saying? Like, now, if it gets to a point where he is suicidal, you know, talking about hurting himself, then you need to take more extreme precautions.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just if he's, you know, functioning depressive, then try to have those conversations and get him mindful, because a lot of times we don't even think about what can someone do to help us because we're so, for lack of a better way of saying it, we're so bogged down with what we're dealing with, what our mind is telling us, trying to sort out the lies from the truth. You know what I mean? It's almost like a betrayal of the mind. Like your mind is telling you things that are not happening, that do not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be my suggestion. Educate yourself, communicate with him, give him space if he needs it, or hem him up if he needs it. When I say hem him up, like I said, if he's hurting himself or talking about hurting himself, then, you know, you need to get the proper personnel involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've pretty much covered it. The only thing I will add is something from my experience. If you happen to get frustrated or exasperated with him, do not attack him talking about how you don't like how his depression is making you feel. that's a surefire way to escalate things in the wrong direction. I've had that experience, and that person is no longer a part of my life.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than someone centering themselves, and when you're talking about or they're asking you about your issue, and it's like, so did you ask me to help me, or did you ask me just so you could start talking about yourself?
Yeah, but definitely education is key because depression does not look like what a lot of people think it looks like. It's, you've seen some of the commercials on TV with folks like, I just feel pain, and it's like, that shit's serious. And I would also say, from my experience, if someone has like a chronic disease, something like diabetes, that can really impact their depression. It can really make it worse. And, if you just do a Google search of diabetes and depression, it's a whole other world that you hadn't thought about. And, my doctor and I, we've been working very hard to figure out how to get my diabetes consistently controlled, which has been a fucking struggle. And it has been years. And I have to say that getting it, finally figuring out the formula and some of this stuff has made a huge difference in my life in just keeping me level, and just, and also obviously safeguarding my health as well. So, be aware of how some of this stuff all fits together, because it's not easy at all.
I agree with
Okay.
that.
Yeah, so I would like I'm so humbled that you visited my humble chateau,
No, thank you for
Mr.
having me and for the
Trulificent.
invite.
Yes. Now, where can the folks find you? Because you are in places. So where might they track you and your shows down?
So the keep it quick and simple. You can find me on my individual pages on social media. It's at Trillificent, spelled how it sounds. You can find all of my podcasts and my podcast network dealings if you just follow at Flawless Noises on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, or go to flawlessnoises.com. All of the same information is there. And for the QPOC hashtag, you can just search for the hashtag on any of those, hashtag PODSBYQPOC. And you can also go to podsbyqpoc.com. That's where the directory is. And I should be at any of those places.
Okay, well, see, you covered a lot of my normal closer because we always shout out Pods by Q-Pac. So,
Now the person
yeah.
does it is here, even though I haven't been doing it for a long time, but bear with me because depression.
It's a mother.
I
Folks
need
don't
an intern or
understand.
something.
Okay, I need to talk to somebody in like, mass communications at the university. I need to slide through that department and be like, hey, Dr. Pookie needs your assistance because I can't keep up.
Can't keep up. Can't keep
Can't
up.
keep up. All right. Well, brother, thank you so much. We are wishing
Thank
you
you.
the very best and also continued healing, particularly in your search for rebuilding your support team. Because I know in a new city, it can be a challenge. Yeah, but definitely give a shout out to me for to the rest of the crew over at Ratchet Ramblings as well as Mama Bree. I love how she issues a read. It's like she's a rough customer. I love her. So thank you
She
again
takes
for.
after
Oh,
me.
does she take after you? Okay, yeah,
A
'cause
little
I
bit, a
a
little
little
bit.
bit. Oh.
She wasn't always like that. I feel like I've rubbed off of her. Her and my godson, he's a Gemini too. So she
Oh.
always jokes that her carrying that Gemini baby, now she got some Gemini traits. And I'm like, were they Gemini traits or were they just breed traits that were dormant?
Thank you. Yeah, but because he is adorable. I saw a picture of the two of you and I was like, that little boy is so cute. He reminds me of my nephew. So yeah, I'm just happy to see that the move is working well for you. And Flawless Noises. I was like, wow, they are doing stuff. So y'all might inspire me to new heights.
We trying to get to the new heights our damn selves, but I appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. I mean, hey, you're not going to get anywhere unless you at least take a step And you guys have taken a huge step forward. So now it's just, you know, you laid out a path. So
do that. Thank
get
you.
To step in. Thank yeah. You, so, you. All right. So you guys know how to reach me. I'm Dr. Pookie on Twitter, the Bugetto spelling, Pookuie. And you can also catch the show on Pod Sexual. Both of those handles are on Twitter. We're on Facebook, Sexual Healing from Top to Bottom, and the Gram. I'm going to try to get something posted because this is our first guest. So I am going to get the marketing and the media pumping for this one. So you will see this episode being promoted on my platforms, and I imagine also through our brother Trulificent. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you again. Keep dry up there.